Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, October 15th, 2013. I'm your host, Heather Stegel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to share ideas and resources to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Dr. Tasha Urich, who is here to share insights from her new book, Bankable Leadership. Tasha is an organizational psychologist, speaker, and New York Times bestselling author of Bankable Leadership, Happy People, Bottom Line Results, and the Power to Deliver Both. Her life's work is to develop or to help organizations succeed by improving the effectiveness of their leaders and teams. With a contagious passion and energy, Dr. T, as her clients call her, pairs her scientific grounding in human behavior with a practical approach to solving leadership challenges. Her 10-plus year career has spanned roles as an external consultant and a direct report to both CEOs and human resources executives. The majority of Dr. Urich's work has been with executives in Fortune 500 organizations. With a PhD in industrial organizational psychology from Colorado State University and bachelor's in theater and psychology from Middlebury College, she serves on the faculty of the Center for Creative Leadership. She has served as an adjunct faculty member in Colorado State University's psychology and business schools, where she earned a commendation for teaching excellence. Tasha, welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with sort of a fundamental question about your book, I guess, which is, what does it mean for leadership to be bankable?
That's a great question, I think, to start off with, just to give the context. A bankable leader is someone who is able to learn through experience how to balance attention that every leader feels, which is really to focus on their people, create a great environment where people want to come to work, while at the same time driving business results. And for most leaders, that can feel like a trade-off, and that's why, you know, my personal opinion about why many leaders struggle is they're not able to do both of those things, and that's really the essence of bankable leadership.
Okay. So there's a tension of creating healthy work environments and achieving results. So let's go to the nugget, I guess, of this show, which is that this show is geared toward people who are implementing change in their organizations. So I'd like to just connect the dots between bankable leadership and organizational change. So from your point of view, how do bankable leaders help implement organizational change?
So again, I love this topic, which is why I'm so excited to talk about it with you. I have a whole chapter in the book on implementing change. And I think with your listeners in particular who are influencing without authority, the idea of, you know, being a bankable leader and influencing change is even more important. And so there are three basic components that I provide in the book to help somebody successfully implement change. And it's really, it corresponds to the head, the heart, and the hands. And basically what that means is, does the employee, you know, the head, does the employee or the person who you're trying to influence, do they understand the change? Do they understand the reason for it? Do they have a context about why it's happening? The second piece, the heart, is more of the people-focused side, right? Does that person believe in the change? Are they being supported in some of the more emotional aspects of how we deal with change? And then the third component, which is hands, is something that a lot of people forget. You could have an employee who, or a teammate or a colleague who understands the change and buys in, but doesn't know what they're supposed to do, whether they don't have the right training, they don't have the right skills, or the behavior hasn't been spelled out for them. So that's really what that third component is about. And of course, there are many sort of different dimensions and nuances to that, but that's the high-level model that I like to use for bankable leadership.
Okay, great. So back to this idea of bankable leadership and there being this tension, Why is it important from your point of view to strive for both results and happy people?
Sure. I think the best way to illustrate that is to talk about what happens at the extremes. You know, a leader who is so focused on people that they forget results, or vice versa. So, you know, the leader that is so overly focused on people, I always call the cool parent leader. And that's Steve Carell from The Office. That's the boss who says, you know, I don't want you to think of me as your boss. I want you to think of me as your friend. And the problem with that type of leadership, it's usually great to work for that person for about a month, right? But then as an employee or as a colleague, you start to have this feeling of, what is this person not telling me, right? There's got to be something that I could do better. There sometimes is bad news that leaders have to give, and they have to give it honestly and without fear. And so what happens with this overly people-focused leader is the results start to suffer. People get confused. They get resentful. And then the reverse is just as bad, and that's what I call the trail of dead bodies leader, the leader who is so focused on creating results that they completely forget about the human element of what they're doing. I always give the example of Steve Jobs. I think he got results as a leader, but he was notoriously tough on his people. And I always like to wonder, you know, if he had stayed in power as a CEO, what would have been the long-term effect on the company? My theory is that it's not a matter of if, but when that leadership style becomes unsustainable. So going all the way back to the earliest research on the topic of leadership, we know that the leaders who are able to do both of those things and focus on them equally are the ones who get really the guaranteed prosperity in their organizations.
So then why is it difficult to achieve both?
I think it can feel like a trade-off. You know, one example might be, let's say you have an employee who's performing poorly, or a colleague that's performing poorly that's on a project team maybe that you're working on. And you feel sometimes like, okay, either I can sit this person down and tell them the truth, which will inevitably upset them and be great for the project, or I can try to kind of dance around it and be nice and not deal with the problem or the issue, but then the results are going to start to suffer. So I think that's, you know, that's just one example. But from a leadership perspective, in the work that I've done, you know, for more than a decade with leaders at all levels, whether it's a first-level supervisor all the way to CEOs, in every situation, there seems like there's some kind of a choice. You know, either, either I can give this feedback and tell the truth, or I can keep my relationship with this person. And again, the most skilled leaders are able to give the feedback while maintaining the relationship and getting the results they're looking for.
Well, have you found that, you know, in the tendency to lean either one way or the other, is there a percentage of leaders that lean one way or the other towards happy people or results?
The most interesting thing is when I'll do workshops with intact teams and organizations, and I work with companies all the way from sales teams to the hospitality industry, kind of on the more people-focused side, and I also work with a lot of organizations that might have a stereotype of being more results-focused, like engineers or physicians, as examples.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I do these workshops where I ask people to kind of line up and say, here's where I feel most comfortable, I almost always have variation. And I'm in the process, actually, of collecting some empirical data on this, but just even anecdotally,
right,
I think no matter what position you're in, there seems to be quite a bit of variability.
Interesting.
No, it's fascinating. I want to know the quote-unquote real scientific answer, but we'll see.
Right, right. So you're working on it for your next book.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so then assuming that people listening would want to become more of a bankable leader, what are the steps that someone could take to move in that direction?
Well, the cheeky answer is, of course, to purchase a copy of Bankable Leadership.
Right? Of course.
We'll give you the but at a high level, the prescription that I always like to give my leaders is three basic steps. And I'll kind of go through each of them and maybe give an example. The first step is to know where you stand. And what I mean by that is many leaders, not most leaders, but many, walk around every day and don't have a true understanding of the way other people perceive them. And so to embark on a journey to become a better leader, it's very important for anyone who wants to do that to get a real honest view of how people see them. The analogy I use is, after the holidays and we all gain too much weight, we want to start a diet on January 1st. What's the first thing we do? We get on the scale. We want to know what's the reality, what's really going on. And so whether that's through, an honest colleague who will tell you the truth, sometimes your spouse or partner can give you just as helpful feedback as somebody at work, or whether it's through a more formal process. You and I both do coaching. There are 360 assessments, but really to get that true feedback. The second step is something that's a little controversial, but it's something that I've never seen fail, which is to pick one behavior at a time. One of the flaws, in my opinion, of the way most organizations develop their leaders is that they go through this, sort of hilarious yearly charade where every leader is required to sit down with their boss and come up with, usually it's 3 to 5 leadership development goals. I want to be a better coach. I want to be a better listener. I want to be better at giving feedback. But the problem is most people can't simultaneously work on 3 to 5 things at a time. They can't even remember that many things. One of the things I always do in my keynotes is say, raise your hand if you can list for me all of your development goals for this year. And usually in a ballroom of, 400 people, one or two people will sheepishly raise their hand. and that's just, it's delusional. It's crazy. That's what I call delusional development. And so instead, what I always do is suggest, you can have a list of 20 things, but if you really want to see improvement, you're going to focus on one thing at a time, one behavior at a time that's small. So the third step, which is what that leads into, is to relentlessly, deliberately practice. Again, I think most of us just assume that by putting pen to paper and coming up with these goals that will magically, as if through osmosis, get better. But it's really about, let's say I do want to get better at giving feedback. I know that I'm too people-focused and I need to be more honest and constructive. If that's my goal and what I'm trying to work on, what I have to do is every day wake up, go to work, and try to look for those opportunities, knowing that sometimes I'm going to, succeed wildly and then I can say, wow, what did I do that helped that? And sometimes I'm going to fail, and I'm going to learn something, which is usually what happens if you look at failure in the right way. So I think those three steps in sum total are what leads to bankable leadership, really for anybody that's committed to it.
Okay, so the three steps are know where you are now, and then identify one key thing to work on, and then work on it every day.
Perfectly summarized.
What did you say? Okay. Well, and just thinking as you were talking, I was also thinking, well, these three steps are also a great model for trying to change other people's behavior in organizations as you're trying to implement change. One of the key things you have to change is behavior.
Yep.
So not inundating people with 3 to 5 things that they have to do, but working on one at a time is a good prescription, I guess.
I agree. Yeah, I actually have one client right now that's doing a pretty massive change in the way they're structured, and it's really very emotionally challenging for all of the employees, I think for good reason. And the one thing that they're trying to focus on right now is creating a collaborative environment. And they're not kind of throwing, 25 different things that the employees need to be doing. They're really saying, let's start with this and build from there. And I think not only does that help people adopt new behaviors during change, but it helps them manage that complexity and uncertainty that they feel, right? So if they know this is the one thing I need to try to be doing every day, it gives them a little bit of a shortcut, and it helps make it easier.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in your book, you have, seems like, four different tensions that you organized the book around. And I was wondering if you could talk about each of those a little bit.
Absolutely.
You've got the, you know what they are.
I should be able to recite them. It would be really sad if I
hope
didn't.
So.
Yeah, keep me honest, though. Okay, so basically the notion of these four tensions is that under that those two, categories of people and results, there are different ways that tension shows up. And like you said, that's exactly how I've organized the book to get a little bit more specific. So the first tension is between being human as a leader and driving performance. And really what this is about is, am I going to, treat my employees like the self-actualized, wonderful people that I know they are, or am I going to really try to focus on driving that performance? The second is the tension between being helpful and driving responsibility. And this is an interesting one. I think managers and anybody, formally or informally, that focus too much on helping other people, they start to enable them. And what happens is, you know, if I'm a manager and my employee screws something up and I step in to fix it, what happens over time? The person becomes less and less responsible for what they're doing. The other end of that spectrum, though, if I'm not being helpful, maybe I'm making them too responsible. And what that means is I'm not helping them in any way. I'm kind of expecting them to guess my expectations. I'm you know, doing the famous holding them accountable, which never happens when something good has taken place. But really kind of you're your own island as an employee, and good luck to you. And again, the best leaders are able to help their employees in a way that's not enabling them, but also stepping back and letting them own, you know, the product of their work. The third tension is also a tough one, and that's the tension between being thankful and driving improvement. And the being thankful is something that we all know we should do. As formal and informal leaders, we need to appreciate people, recognize them. But if you do that too much, what happens? People start to become entitled. They start to feel complacent, right? I want a raise just for showing up every day. But then on the other end of that, a manager who only drives improvement, right? Maybe their team has done the impossible, and instead of saying, great job, they say, next time, you need to do an even better job. So I think balancing that and recognizing people for their effort when it's earned, but also ceaselessly pushing them to be better, I think is so important. The last tension is between being happy and driving productivity. We all know, you know, you hear these stories about Silicon Valley companies where the keg is brought out every Friday at 12 p.m. and, you know, it's a big giant party, but they also get stuff done, right? So I think the leaders who are able to inject a little bit of fun and humor in their environment while still demanding employees to get things done and do their job are the ones who get the best performance and have the happiest people who want to stay there and stay working there. So those are the four tensions. Did I get them right?
You did. I was looking at them as you went. So just looking at these, you've got on one side drive performance, drive responsibility, drive improvement, drive productivity, which all sounds like, on one hand, implementing change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to get more, better, faster, whatever. And then on the other side, you have be human, be helpful, be thankful, be happy. And just thinking of how change should be done, those things list the way change should be done versus the taskmaster, like we're just going to do it kind of leadership, the authoritative leadership. So I was just wanted to make that connection that, you know, this balance happens when we're implementing change. If we go too far in the direction of let's get this done and don't factor in the human element, then that can be, like you said, it wears people down.
You're absolutely right. I actually talk about an example of the dean of a women's college here in Denver who came into her role. I talk about this in the book, and she knew that her style was really more of that results-focused change leader, and she was coming in to do a turnaround. And one of the first things she told me she did, to her credit, was to take a step back and explain to her team, okay, guys, here's the deal. My natural tendency in a time like this is, you know, thinking about change like it's a bridge that we're crossing, is to run across the bridge and go, woohoo, come on, and then turn around and realize no one's behind me. And what they would do is they would use that metaphor, you know, she would be all the way across the bridge and they'd say, wait a minute, you know, we're not there yet. And so I think it was that metaphor is a really good one to think about that balance between people and results. You can't run across the bridge. You have to take slow, progressive steps, but you have to turn around and make sure that your team is still behind you.
That's a great metaphor.
Yeah, she came up with it, not me, but yeah, I love
it
too.
Yeah, sure. So just thinking of the audience, so this show is geared toward people who are implementing change, usually from the middle of their organizations. And so from that perspective, some people who are listening might think of themselves as leaders, leaders of change, or also leaders of their own departments if they have people working for them. But also, in the context of change, people in that role usually need to get other people to lead, help lead in other departments, to lead their own people through the change. And so I was curious to hear what you would say about how do you help someone else become a bankable leader?
I love that. So I'm thinking about an organization that I used to work at where I had kind of a similar project, and just to anchor it in something, what it was I was leading our organizational effectiveness function within HR, which was in our corporate environment. And in a lot of big companies, the corporate, you know, people are kind of not quite trusted, and people in the business might have a question mark about what's their real motive. And so it was a challenging situation where we were implementing an employee engagement survey across the whole company, which was worldwide. And what we had to do essentially was exactly what you're saying: bring people into the business on board to act as leaders within their particular businesses for, you know, any changes or improvements we were going to do based on what we learned in the survey. And I had a boss at that time, who I actually also talk about in the book, who told me at the very beginning of this process, "Tasha, people support what they help create." Hmm. And that was the simplest and truest statement I think I had heard, you know, at that point in my career. And so what I tried to do was, from the very beginning, choose this team of people, you know, and choose them wisely, not pick people who I knew were going to try to sabotage it, but maybe pick some people who I knew wouldn't agree with me, people who were in influential parts of the business, and help them come on board early into the process and engage in that planning together. And what we found pretty quickly, actually, is by bringing them in, we were able to influence the way the process was going while also hearing from them, you know, how we could make our process better. And so to help other people be bankable, I think you first have to be bankable. And one of the huge components of change leadership, I think, is bringing people along and involving them in the process. But what we found, and I think what many change leaders find, is by doing that, it leads to these other benefits as well, where they're going and they're representing this change, and suddenly it becomes my change. It's not the person from corporate who's making us do this. It's, you know, I really want to make this successful as well.
Yeah, sorry, I was thinking ahead to my next question, but I wanted to loop back and just say that, yeah, I totally agree with that. That when people support what they help create, right, is what you said.
Exactly. And it's not rocket
science. That's been my experience as well, that yeah. It's not, I'm going to create this alone in my office and then go out and implement it. It's how many people can I get involved to help create this so that they help drive it as well.
Exactly. Well said.
So I'm wondering how to link that to the bankable leader. So you said be a bankable leader yourself and then involve people to help create the change, but I'm wondering about the component of, you know, if you've got somebody who's just a taskmaster in another department, and you know that in order to implement the change well, they also need to work on creating a healthy work environment and not, and you know, pulling back a little bit, how would you advise someone who is in a position to try to influence that person? What would you advise them to do?
I think somebody who, you know, again, is more of a results at all costs, trail of dead bodies leader, there's a couple strategies that I would recommend to influence a person like that. I think the first is to appeal to their self-interest, you know, as they want to get results. So if there's some way for you to tie whatever change you're trying to make or whatever you're asking of them in some way to their overall big picture or the way they connect their actions with, you know, how they're doing and the results they're achieving, I think that can be a really powerful way to do it. I also think that, you know, people who are more on the results side tend to be, you know, very efficient. Bottom line it for me. Don't beat around the bush. Don't give me touchy-feely stuff. Just tell me what you need to have happen and how. I also think that everybody's human, and so you need to still have that component of, am I listening to you, am I understanding you, even if they are a results-focused leader. But I think those would be probably my two, just off the top of my head, suggestions.
Okay, well then I'll ask the question on the flip side of that. If you've got someone who is more of trying to be everybody's friend, but that's not going to help drive change either, what would you recommend?
Okay. So this is a little trickier because in a change situation, it goes back to that be thankful versus drive improvement tension. The mm-hmm. the cool parent, you know, colleague is not going to want to rock the boat. And sometimes when change is required, people have to kind of go against the grain and act in a way that other people aren't acting that might initially ruffle some feathers. So what I would do for this person, if you're trying to influence them, is to really sit down and hear what their concerns are and maybe even try to use their perspective to help inform the way you're approaching the change. Because the gift of a people-focused leader or colleague is that they're going to be really cognizant of how are people responding to this change.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a way for you to involve them in a way that's, you know, about collecting feedback on the change or, you know, really going and connecting with people and asking them how things are going and what are their concerns, I think that's a way to kind of take maybe that potential limitation that they're not going to be out in front saying, you know, let's go, but also helping them be engaged in the process in a way that's valuable.
Great. Well, how would you tie a bow on this? What do you want people to take away from this conversation?
I think the bottom line for me and the reason I get up every day and do what I do is that I believe that anyone can become a more effective leader. And whether that's formally in a managerial role or like, you know, a lot of listeners on your show, you're an informal leader, which again I think is even harder in most cases. There was one study that was done in 2006 in Singapore at a university. And what the researchers did is they wanted to find out how much of leadership is, you know, nature, kind of inborn genetic, and how much of leadership is about the environment and the experiences you have and the learning, you know, that you need to get there. And what they found was that even though 30% of leadership was based on kind of inborn factors, you look at somebody like Martin Luther King Jr., he had something in him that a lot of us don't have. They mm-hmm. found that 70% of leadership was learnable. It was based on your environment. It was based on your experiences. And so I talk to a lot of people, you know, who are struggling in their role as a leader, and they say things like, well, I just wasn't born to be a leader. And I always say, au contraire. You might not want to be a leader, which is entirely different, right? But in my experience, again, you know, doing this every day, rolling up my sleeves, working with leaders at all levels, if you have that true commitment and a belief that you can get better, and kind of going back to those three steps we talked about, I truly believe that anybody can be an effective, bankable leader.
Great. Well, Tasha, thanks so much for being here, and I'd love to give you an opportunity to share where people can learn more about you and find your book.
Oh, fabulous. So I love that. Bankable Leadership is available in bookstores everywhere, and it's also online on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And then if you want to kind of connect with me and become part of our community, the two websites I'd suggest are bankableleadership.com and then Tasha Urich, which is TashaEurich.com.
Great. And I can recommend Bankable Leadership. It's I think you've created a book that's very practical. There's a lot of, it's a good combination of, you know, scientific studies and real life relatable people who and examples and how they have become more toward the center of those struggles that you described. So thank you for writing it, and congratulations on becoming the New York Times bestseller.
Oh, I appreciate it, Heather. It was great to be here. Thanks for your questions. They were awesome.
And thank you for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit enclaria.com. While you're there, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you will also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra-low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Dude.